We kick things off by welcoming to the show the senior baseball writer from Sports Illustrated. You see him, of course, on Fox Sports and the MLB Network. Tom Verducci joining us this afternoon. Tom, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
A lot of things going on as we get set to close in on the Major League Baseball season after a really remarkable 2016 year. And part of that is the subject of a book of yours, a new book that will be out soon entitled The Cubs Way.
Yeah, the book will be published on March the 28th. You can pre-order it before then, of course. And it really is the inside story, not just of the World Series, but how this team really transformed under Theo Epstein in 5 years, going from a team that lost more than 100 games to a team that broke the curse after 108 years. And I know a lot of Red Sox Nation can relate to the catharsis that comes with winning a championship that's been so long in the waiting. So there's a lot of cool stories about how the team came together behind the scenes as well as on the field for that fantastic World Series.
Well, of course, we know Theo's worked very well here in New England, and it's hard for me to say it because it's blasphemy in these parts, but I've always been a big Joe Maddon fan. These guys, if they're not smarter than everybody else, Tom, do they at least have the capacity to look at the game and players and building a team in a different way?
Yeah, I think they do. And listen, I think the landscape has gotten a lot flatter around baseball when it comes to some of these edges and inefficiencies teams try to take advantage of, especially when it comes to the analytics. So I think the great separator has become the humanistic qualities of the front office and field manager. And I think the Cubs really had that lick between Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon. They created just an incredible culture. First of all, making really good decisions about who to bring into the Cubs, and then the manager and general manager making it work, because I really think that it sounds corny, but it's true that this team, and I noticed this from spring training last year when I was around the Cubs, they had a very special vibe about them where it really was all about the group more than it was about the individual. And it wasn't an accident how they put this together or how it came together on the field. And I think those two guys you mentioned had more to do with that atmosphere and vibe than anybody else. And I think that has become a separator in today's game, that kind of chemistry. It's very elusive, but when you have it, certainly the Cubs had it last year, you can see it.
Well, you have to think that that championship makes Theo a lock for the Hall of Fame when that time rolls around, but he's still a pretty young guy. Where does he go from here, and does he go beyond the world of baseball, do you think?
It's a great question. Now, last year he did re-sign a five-year contract with the Cubs, and I fully expect him to finish out at least those 5 years with the Cubs. After all, if you watch the World Series, you saw this was not just a really good Cubs team. It was a very young team. And I think they do have a window here to get back to multiple World Series. So I think he wants to see that. Job one is to try to do something that 1908 team, and that is win back-to-back World Series titles. Of course, that's especially hard to do in today's game with the extra round of playoffs. So that's really what's in front of him in the immediate future, this year and I think the next 5 years. After that, I'm not sure. You know, I think you're right. I think he's a Hall of Famer if he decided to walk away from the game today. And I'm sure there's probably, and I know Theo has, you know, he's such a wide Renaissance thinker that I think he does have a life beyond baseball. Where that is, I'm not sure, whether that's politics, whether that's nonprofits. I'll tell you this, whatever it is, he will make an impact on those fields just as much as he did in baseball.
Well, we're about a week or so away from pitchers and catchers reporting to camp for most teams. Tom, what team poses the biggest threat to the Cubs getting back to the World Series from the National League?
I think the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's a very, very deep team. And obviously any team where you start with the best pitcher in baseball, Clayton Kershaw, it gives you a fighting chance, of course. They couldn't knock off the Cubs last year. They had some injuries, weren't entirely at full strength. But I think the Dodgers are a very, very deep team. It serves them well over the course of the season, probably actually better in the course of the season than the postseason. And I'm not sure there's another team in the National League that could really challenge the Cubs. I mean, I like the Washington Nationals. I like the New York Mets. I think the Cardinals will be better. But to me, the two best teams in the National League are the Cubs and the Dodgers.
We're talking to Tom Verducci of Sports Illustrated here on Downtown. Tom, from your perspective, who are the most improved teams in Major League Baseball thanks to what they accomplished in the offseason?
Yeah, that's a great question, and sometimes that's the kiss of death to win the winter, because a lot of teams get headlines in the offseason. It doesn't pan out when you put the product together on the field. But I did like the Chris Sale trade for the Red Sox. I think he was the best pitcher who changed teams in the offseason, and you know, I like that team anyway, but especially you add a real legitimate ace at the front of that rotation there. You have to like that. You know, I've actually looked at the Colorado Rockies as a little bit of a sleeper team. I like some of the moves that they made. They weren't necessarily large, but Ian Desmond, a free agent, Greg Holland to the bullpen, a team that was sort of a on the cusp contender last year for 4 months before they wore down at the end. They could be a sleeper team this year. And I talked earlier about Sale was the best pitcher who changed teams. To me, the best hitter who changed teams was Edwin Encarnacion. He's with the Blue Jays, of course, recently. I never expected he would wind up in Cleveland because I thought his market would be too high, too expensive for their blood. And yet he wound up with the best team in the American League, the Cleveland Indians. So those three teams stand out for me, the Red Sox, the Rockies, and the Indians.
Mike Napoli apparently going to Texas, and word from some sources today that the Yankees may be getting close to signing Carter, the National League home run champion from last year. And this Yankees team's an interesting one because they don't miss the playoffs very often, and it looks like Brian Cashman is putting together a pretty good mix of veteran guys and young talent.
It's a very interesting team, and I think the Yankees could go in a couple of different directions in terms of their record. For 2017, they're much better equipped, and I'm sure Brian Cashman would say this, to really contend in 2018 and 2019 now that they've restocked their farm system. So a lot of their best young players you might not see in 2017, or maybe you just get a little cameo appearance. But I do think they'll be a factor in the American League East. I think the Yankees are a team similar to last year, should be around the mid to upper 80 win range, which puts them in the mix for a wild card. The question will be, how good is their pitching? We know they're very good in the last couple of innings of the game with Dellin Betances and Aroldis Chapman, but a lot of questions with Tanaka and Sabathia, Michael Pineda, some of these younger players may show up in the rotation from time to time. Not a lot of sure things in the rotation, so they're playing uphill a little bit when it comes to pitching strength. But I'm really impressed with what they've done. It's very hard to restock your system as quickly as the Yankees did, and they did that last year with trades for Miller and Chapman. And I think they made some good decisions on the players they brought in. They went for some really high-impact position players. So I would say they're more a team to look at for next year rather than this year.
Have we had a stretch in that you can recall in the history of Major League Baseball where we've lost so much young talent in such a short period of time with the death of Ventura recently, Jose Fernandez last year? It's been a really rough time for Major League Baseball.
No, you know, I don't recall anything like it. You're talking about two players within 4 months, but more than just two players, similar in that they were among the two best young pitchers in all of baseball, incredible futures ahead of them. And the type of pitchers that you want to see. You know, if you go to the ballpark, you know you're going to see pitchers who throw hard, they strike out batters. And more than that, they had a certain elan on the mound where they're just captivating. You could tell that they were enjoying what they were doing, and it was fun to watch those guys with so much energy and stuff on the mound. So I don't believe anything like that has happened in baseball history. When you combine the talent, youthfulness, and just kind of the entertainment value they brought to the mound. Really, they will be severely, severely missed. I actually think it's really a deep challenge for both organizations, both the Marlins and the Royals, because both of those pitchers meant so much to the organization, you know, both in terms of just the nuts and bolts of putting a team together where you rely on those guys to give you 200 innings and be one of your best pitchers, but also homegrown in those organizations. You know, just favorites of the coaching staff, the minor league staff, the front office. So it really is an emotional hit, I think, for both organizations. It'll be interesting to see how they carry on, and it will not be easy without them.
It really is a golden age in Major League Baseball for young talent. We saw it in the All-Star game last year. So many good guys under the age of 25. Is there a player that maybe gets short shrift and gets overlooked with so much young talent out there?
Well, I think you're right in terms of talking about the young talent, and especially at the shortstop position, because I think shortstop, we've never seen a class of young shortstops like we have right now. I'm talking about guys who, forget 25, a lot of these guys are 23 and younger. You know, Corey Seager and Carlos Correa and Francisco Lindor, Xander Bogaerts there in Boston. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I think last year's World Series gave Francisco Lindor a little bit of the spotlight. I think people looked up and they said, well, who is this kid? And I think he had been underlooked. You know, baseball, a lot of times you do have to get into the postseason and probably the World Series if you're not in a major market to really get some notice. And I think people just started to learn who this guy is. And a great player, of course. Great person, too, who plays with a lot of joy on the field. So when you first brought up, you know, who might get the spotlight, that's what came to my mind. And I think a lot of people will find out more about Lindor this year.
Tom, you wrote recently about the situation involving the hacking scandal, the St. Louis Cardinals and the Houston Astros. And you wrote about the fact that Rob Manfred and MLB could have been much tougher on the Cardinals. Did they send a loud enough message to those who might be interested in doing something similar?
Well, I don't know about a message, because I think the federal government took care of the message. When you send someone off to prison for 46 months for essentially stealing proprietary baseball information, I think that in itself had a chilling effect on anybody who might even be thinking about that kind of activity. So I think Rob Manfred's position was it's a difficult one, trying to come up with a penalty that fits the crime. That's a very hard thing to do. There had been no precedent like this that any commissioner had faced before. So he was kind of out there on his own establishing precedent. My only point was that I do think it was a very severe penalty. So much of this game now is really digital information, proprietary information, and the protection of that information is paramount. And I just thought that the Cardinals, if you want to call it getting off easy, but I'll say got off easier by the fact that they did not lose any players out of their system, and they did not lose a first-round draft pick. So I think one of those probably should have been in order, given this was not a one-time hack. This happened over multiple years, multiple times. And I know that baseball's investigation, as well as the federal government, as well as the Cardinals' own investigation, did not connect anybody else in terms of knowledge or being an accomplice in this case, rather than Chris Correa, the gentleman who pled guilty. So you may assume that there must have been somebody else who knew, but the fact is none of the evidence revealed a direct connection to anybody else in the front office. So I think that's probably why the commissioner let the team off a little bit easier, essentially saying this was one rogue employee.
Tom Verducci, Sports Illustrated, Fox Sports, the MLB Network. Tom, it's great talking with you. We really enjoy your work and appreciate you making time for us here this afternoon.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.